It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, a principal in Milwaukee's western suburbs at Brookfield East High School, is named the 2024 National Principal of the Year. The honor presented by the National Association of Secondary School Principals at a ceremony in Washington, D.C. Call in with a question or comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew Farley has been principal of his alma mater, Brookfield East, for a decade. Andy, congratulations and welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to join this morning. I appreciate your time and having me on.
How do you feel at this moment? What is your reaction to winning?
It's been an intense week. So last week we were in D.C. for three or four-day conference. They pull every state principal of the year together from either the middle or school level, and it's an amazing learning opportunity to collaborate with principals from across the country that are doing great things in their schools and in their classrooms every day. And then, you sort of move towards this announcement. I knew I was one of three finalists for Principal of the Year, and then Friday night they announce it at the banquet with all the principals of the year, and it's a complete honor and really humbling at the same time. So, it's still a little bit in shock, but excited to be back at Brookfield East here this morning.
You've said you prioritize cultivating student leadership. How do you do that? Why is that a priority?
Yeah, it's really important. And certainly in our high schools, our staff came together about a decade ago, my first year, and outlined our mission, vision, and core values. And one of those core values that still resonates is the importance of student leadership and building student leaders to impact our school, but more importantly, be successful and impact our communities and region and country and globe post-graduation. So I think we do that in a number of different ways. In their classrooms, we need students to be leaders of their learning. We need students to lead their collaborative groups and our teams and organizations. We really strive for engagement. Over 90% of our students are invested in at least one club or activity or sport, and we think that's a really important leadership development opportunity. We've developed a number of leadership teams that are service-based, that are club-based, that are activity-based. Our athletic and activities director has done a wonderful job of building over 70 clubs and activities and service programs that all kids could connect to. Mm. And then we have really some high-impact leadership teams, too, like a principal's cabinet, which I love to meet with weekly. It's about 60 to 70 kids, 9th through 12th grade, and they give great feedback on what works here and opportunities to grow. And I think one of the great opportunities here with this award has been able to tell the story of the Brookfield East and Brookfield Central Hope Squads and the Hope Squads that exist throughout Wisconsin in 150 different middle school and high schools. And that's an amazing student leadership group that works at building mental health and physical health and a total comprehensive approach to wellness for kids. And we know how important that is.
Are Hope Squads new to your school or new to Wisconsin?
We are in about our sixth or seventh year as a Hope Squad school, originated in Utah. We were, us and our partners at Brookfield Central were the first two Hope Squads in the state of Wisconsin, and then we're fortunate to have support that's built that out to about 150 throughout Wisconsin right now.
We're talking about school leadership with Andy Farley, Brookfield East High School principal and 2024 National Principal of the Year. You can join in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Kevin in Janesville. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good morning. Kate, you mentioned the principal's great track record at closing achievement gaps. I am a middle school teacher here in southern Wisconsin. Achievement gaps are huge on our to-do list. How do you get kids to engage on standardized tests, which are measuring those gaps? I see so many kids that are just turned off, won't participate, don't give it their all. What do you do? What else can we do?
Kevin, thank you. Andy.
That's a great question. I think, you know, the article that broke last week about ADT hits a new 30-year low or 25-year low for composite scores across the country. We were fortunate to have a staff meeting that next day, and we talked about how that's not the same report we received here at Brookfield East. So our class of 2023 had a composite of 23.8, but an amazing 24.4 on the reading portion of the ACT. And one of the aspects our ACT statewide coordinator talks about is the importance of rigorous learning experiences every day. You don't prepare for the assessment. You prepare for learning and deep learning and critical thinking and problem solving in every class and every content area. We're a really proud Avid school. I don't know if your listeners are familiar.
Familiar with Avid, but yes, please share. I have a daughter in Avid. Go ahead.
Yes, and I have a son, and we have a son in Avid. Avid is an amazing program that seeks to stretch the potential of every learner by giving an academic skill set and, more importantly, a set of confidence that they thrive in the classroom and beyond. So I think to answer that question, I think we don't focus on the product or the result. We focus on the process. There's some of the success here. We have amazing instructional coaches, amazing teachers that have deployed a critical reading process in every content area. So when you talk about when you're reading at Brookfield East High School, you're reading the same way, regardless if you're in math or social studies or world languages. That process and that language has really helped elevate our students' confidence in reading so that they're deeper thinkers and stronger readers, and you know, the result is increased learning as a result. I also think, you know, we all know the importance of high expectations in the classroom, and we all know the access to rigorous content is really important for all kids. So when we talk about being a national blue ribbon school, we are so honored to receive the gap closing nominee or recognition, one of only three high schools in the entire country. And I really think it comes down to teacher confidence, teacher skills, the impact of teachers every day in their classrooms. We know how important that is. But the feedback piece, the magic that happens in classrooms where our students feel safe and stretched and supportive in the learning process to achieve academic excellence at rates that maybe they didn't think were possible at the start of the class.
You know, the fact remains, though, that Wisconsin schools have one of the worst racial disparities in the nation, the widest assessment score gaps between Black and white students. So how do we close those opportunity gaps and create schools where a child's race and their class are just not predictors of their outcomes?
Yeah, I love that question. And collaborating with principals across the country, we wrestled with that question. How do we elevate a collective commitment across the country to close those gaps? And we talked about all the same pillars, relevant, rigorous instruction. We have over 25 AP classes here that don't have prerequisite requirements. In the state of Wisconsin, with Start College Now and early college credit, students can access up to 18 college credits that you don't teach at the high school level. We had students in our district access over 180 college credit classes. We know the research about success in high school is connected to that post-secondary readiness, or that success beyond high school, I should say, is connected to rigorous coursework at the high school level, and access to high-level capstone rigorous coursework essential for all kids.
Andy Farley is principal of Brookfield East High School in Milwaukee's western suburbs, recipient of the National Principal of the Year Award. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. An annual award recognizes outstanding high school principals and contributions they make to their school community and their profession. We're in conversation with Brookfield East High School Principal Andy Farley, named 2024 National Principal of the Year. Call in along the way, ask a question, share your views at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Andy, in August, Wisconsin Policy Forum report found turnover among Wisconsin teachers is at record highs. And last year, more than 15% of all teachers moved districts or left the profession entirely. What are you doing to retain teachers at Brookfield East?
It's a great question. It's something that's really important to education and for students. The people we put in front of kids every day is the most important role of school leaders, and we're fortunate here to have an amazing collection of 90 teachers that work every day tirelessly to stretch and support every student's learning. So their engagement's really important. We do a couple things that we believe hopefully have an impact on their retention rate. One is every teacher needs to be on a team, right? Like the importance of team and the importance of teams that are high functioning and impact student engagement, student learning, but also their development and learning, I think, is really important. I think we have an amazing department chair team here, that each department has a leader that deploys an O3 model where they meet regularly with each department member. And those questions are built around engagement and professional learning and goal setting and student learning and their PLC teams, et cetera. I think adult and teacher and educator wellness is really important. So how do we create that sense of balance? Because teaching is really complex. It's more complex than my 12 years in the classroom as a high school social studies teacher. And how do we make sure that we're equipping a sense of balance where you're not on 24/7, because this is the type of job that you can be on 24/7. And where you can disconnect and get away from the work and then come back and re-engage with the work. So I think the importance of team, the importance of teacher leadership, where they see themselves as leaders in their classroom, leaders in their teams, leaders in the department, and certainly leaders within our school and in our district, and the team piece and the engagement piece and the wellness piece are all major factors or pillars. We've been fortunate here that our retention rate's about 95-99%. So we continually dipstick with those pillars to see where we're at and where we're falling short and where we can make meaningful change, where you do feel balanced, you do feel connected to a team, you do feel like your ideas are valued, you do feel like you're growing in your leadership abilities and capacity to influence the school and district.
I think it's interesting you didn't mention pay. How much of this educator shortage that you see has to do with teacher pay and benefits?
I should have talked about pay. Of course, we're always looking at the opportunity to pay and benefits as a district, and we're up for our next cycle of refinement over what that looks like. And I give really significant credit for one of the major benefits we've added to our school district is an on-site health clinic the last couple of years. And just to interact with districts across the country, that's one benefit that many people are trying to. We all know the rising cost of healthcare costs and what that does for districts, but the opportunity for teachers and educators to get their child into a healthcare center that day at no cost, that's a benefit that changes the lives of teachers and educators, and me as a principal being able to do that. On-site healthcare has been a game changer for us.
Do you feel that you are at Brookfield East are in competition with other schools for teachers, for talent?
Yeah, I think that's the unfortunate reality, right? That every teacher has the opportunity to move within the region and move within the state. And to your point, the introduction of this question is that statistic is playing out. Certainly in certain professions, such as special education teachers, we see that movement at a much higher rate. So the opportunity to have and keep amazing teachers is something that's really paramount to the success here at East, and certainly the success at all schools. The constant churn or transition of teachers, we know that impact that has on kids, and we're trying to work tirelessly to keep an amazing staff together, as I know all principals in our roles are trying to do.
We're talking about school leadership with Andy Farley, Brookfield East High School principal and 2024 National Principal of the Year. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Here's Andy in Platteville now. Andy, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hey,
yes.
I want to commend your guest first off. I mean, congratulations on this, and I commend you on your commitment to education, and I commend WPR on putting on this show. I tuned in late just when you started talking about, or you were talking about, college credits in high school. And my thing is, just sometimes I think that's overdone in high school. I hear a lot of kids who are just like, oh, boy, I can get out of college in 3 years, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm just kind of like, what's the hurry? You know, what's the hurry? That's such a wonderful time of life, and people want to rush through the college thing. I understand part of it is financial, but I think there's another part of the equation we should be working on in that. And I just think, what are they missing? What are they not getting in high school by opting for these other classes? A lot of times I work with high school kids, and I'm just shocked at a lot of them on how they can't write a paragraph. They can't. Their writing is terrible. Their spelling is terrible, that sort of thing. So there's just a bunch of thoughts there.
Andy, thank you. Andy Farley, what comes to your mind as you see, this rush to get college credits?
Yeah, I think success rests with the individual, right? I think sometimes we think that, and our principal's cabinet does a great job of reframing this. When we talk about our mission being committed to academic and human excellence, that doesn't mean acquiring as much college credit as possible. Success is truly at an individual level, and they've reframed that, our principal's cabinet's reframed that to be better tomorrow than you were today. I think we're trying to create broad pathways for all kids where they see this is an opportunity that they want to pursue in the future, and whether that be college credit, that's amazing, and certainly we're going to encourage and advocate and create the system that they can access that. Mm-hmm. But we have an amazing launch program here with an executive director that has built 14 different career pathways for juniors and seniors, as well as our college and career coordinator, where kids can almost try that career pathway for a year as a junior and senior. And if they don't like it, that can be just as valuable as if they're like it and passionate about it. And then piece I'd add too, it's open right now here at Brookfield. The place to be is the Spartan Union, which is a student-run, teacher-supported coffee shop. And it is a full-fledged coffee shop. And we built it 5 years ago, all with community donations. And the goal was creating entrepreneurial skills and talents for students that want to go on a business pathway in an atypical sort of approach, where you're actually, what better way to run a business than by running the business at a high school level? So to that caller's question, I think our goal is to create as many pathways and opportunities for students to explore career interests and passions. College credit and access to that is one piece of that, but it's not the only piece to that.
How does it feel to you to walk the halls of the place where you came of age, where you graduated from?
It's a great question. I love this place. Brookfield East is a special place. I feel like developed. We know how important K-12 education is throughout our state. We know how important high school and those four formative years are. It's amazing to serve in this role. Brookfield East and Elmbrook is a special place, and you're right, to walk the halls as a student while the facility has changed. The belief in kids and the power of teachers here and the power of student leadership has not changed, and it's been amazing to have a front row seat in our classrooms and in our clubs and activities and teams, and see our kids thrive as a result of the work of our teachers and staff.
Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I so appreciate your time and the opportunity to connect with you this morning.
Yeah, take care. Andy Farley leads Brookfield East High School, recently won National Principal of the Year. The celebration occurred in Washington, D.C. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss an approach to the practice of yoga that could be a healing tool for trauma survivors. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life, just in time for scary movie season. Here is producer Maureen McCollum remembering a horror and sci-fi filmmaker who passed away at age 100 this year.
Kenosha native and monster movie director Burt I. Gordon brought the world the legendary likes of The Amazing Colossal Man and Attack of the Puppet People. He worked with Orson Welles and dozens of other stars in a sci-fi and horror film career that stretched seven decades. Andy Turner looks back on the life and career of the man they called Mr. Big.
Everything's going to be all right. I know it is. The doctors are working night and day to find a cure. They feel that if they can stop your growth, they may be able to bring you back to normal.
You don't really believe that? They'll never find a cure for me.
Decades before director Burt I. Gordon created the cult classic Amazing Colossal Man, he was spending his youth in Kenosha movie theaters, watching the latest horror, gangster, and western flicks. But watching just wasn't enough. In his 2009 autobiography, he wrote about becoming acquainted with theater employees, who showed him how to work the projector and splice film. He even befriended the vaudeville stars that one theater booked, learning about their life and secrets. Gordon ended up at the University of Wisconsin, where he made campus newsreels that ran in Madison's downtown theaters. From UW, he moved on to the Army Air Corps, followed by jobs making commercials and documentaries. But with the love of movies and oddities still pounding in his heart and head, he decided he would try his luck in Hollywood.
Many of the mysteries of this vast ocean of space would soon be solved. It would be a race between countries to see which one would be the first to bring our civilization to another planet in space.
Gordon stayed busy in the 1950s and 60s, cranking out creature features of all sorts, like King Dinosaur. Most of his movies featured unnaturally giant beasts, hence his nickname Mr. Big, also his initials. For daughter Patricia Gordon, her father's tenacity, personal touches, and especially his dedication to being a filmmaker are worthy of admiration. Gordon frequently wrote, edited, orchestrated special effects, and more on his movies, like in 1958's Attack of the Puppet People.
But the loss of love has made this mild-mannered man into a maniac. A maniac who wants to make you a plaything. And the fearsome fact is, he knows how to do it.
The thing about Attack of the Puppet People, and I would cry every time I'd see it, spoiler alert, at the end when Franz says, "Don't leave me, I'll be alone," it reminded me of my dad, because he hated being alone.
The opening credits from Puppet People depict Gordon's real family as marionettes. Marionettes from the movie would remain around the family home for years. In 1972, Burt Gordon connected with another famous filmmaker from Kenosha, Orson Welles. Welles starred in Gordon's Necromancy as Mr. Cato, the head of a witch's coven.
Enter the occult world of necromancy. You were brought here for one purpose, necromancy.
A ceremony dating back to the pre-Christian era. It's the art of reviving the dead. It requires involvement with evil spirits.
A photograph from the set shows them smiling at each other. Patricia says it was a highlight of her father's career. Her father was good at handling famous people, she says, and had no problems with the famously individualistic actor and director. Patricia says her dad was always proud of being from Kenosha.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have even heard of Kenosha, and it shaped him as a man, you know.
She has been touched by the attention her father's death received and the love from fans.
I appreciate every single fan and every single person who liked even 1 minute of his films, because that's what he did it for. He did it for the audience and himself, and he loved making it.
Andy Turner brought us that story on movie director Burt I. Gordon. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Hundreds of millions of Americans in Wisconsin and across the nation have experienced some type of traumatic event at least once in their lives. And that's according to the National Council for Mental Well-Being. We explore trauma-informed yoga and its potential impact as a therapy. And you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dina Haslett is a certified trauma-sensitive yoga instructor, founder of Grounded Soul Yoga in Wauwatosa, and a registered nurse. Dina, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
How does trauma-sensitive yoga differ from other forms of yoga?
So trauma-sensitive yoga is a practice that is grounded in assisting participants with dealing with many different forms of trauma. Traditional yoga is the practice itself is grounded in, for example, when I'm teaching a traditional yoga class, because I'm certified to teach both, a traditional yoga class, I am telling the participants what they are doing. So if they are going into downward facing dog, I may say, give them cues in order to direct them into that posture. With trauma sensitive yoga, there is more of an invitation to participate in a form. We don't call it postures. We don't call it traditional asana. But there is an invitation that is there, and the purpose is for the participant to begin to notice their body and notice sensation within their body and notice what they may be even feeling in relationship to their body.
When you talk about downward facing dog, I mean, sometimes yoga can feel so prescriptive, like, you know, press through your fingertips and bend your right knee more, you know, lift up and over. How do you take the kind of regimented feel out of the practice to allow the person to make their own choices and to be in control of their body?
So the best way that we do that is through invitational language. One of the components of trauma-sensitive yoga, in particular TCTSY, which is the method that I am certified in, we use invitational language. And so as opposed to giving the cues of, like what you said, you know, lengthening your fingers, and we allow the participant to do what is best for them. So, for example, when I'm teaching, I will say, you're invited to maybe turn your head to the left. And if that doesn't feel useful for you, maybe you can check in with your body and do something that is more useful for you. So the aspect of power is reduced in the trauma-sensitive practice by inviting the participant to participate in doing what feels best for them and their body in that moment.
Dina, do you know what types of traumatic experiences that people are healing from when they come to you, when they come to trauma-sensitive yoga?
Yes, so there are many different types of traumatic experiences that people come to trauma-sensitive yoga for. One of them being complex trauma, which is more of a developmental trauma that people may have experienced while growing up. So maybe they have grown up in a household where one of their parents was addicted to some type of substance abuse or substance. Or maybe they have in childhood experienced some type of sexual abuse. Or maybe they have a parent that was incarcerated. Also their trauma-sensitive yoga is also useful for, you know, PTSD, regular PTSD, or chronic PTSD. Related to maybe they may have experienced some traumatic event, such as a sexual assault in college, or a sexual assault that may have occurred through like a date rape type situation. Maybe they have experienced being in some type of situation where they have observed some violence. It could be intimate partner violence. It could be maybe they have observed violence with someone else, so which is called vicarious trauma. So there are different types of trauma that it's just such a wide range that TCTSY is good for.
You know, someone might enter your class and do breath work in the practice, close your eyes in the practice. How do you avoid leading participants into physical acts that may trigger their trauma in a painful way?
It always comes back to letting the participant know. Like, I usually let my participants know ahead of time, you know, this practice is an opportunity for you to explore and for you to explore what works best for you. And if closing your eyes does not work for you, then you don't have to do that. If it feels more safe for you to keep your eyes open, then that's you don't have to wait for me to give you permission to do that. That's the part of the practice. You do what works best for you. And I really try to hold space for that, for people to take on the practice and do the practice according to what's going on with you in that particular moment. And if closing your eyes is triggering, if being in the dark is triggering, I approach it from that standpoint of we will do what the participant, it is a very student-centered practice. We really strive to take the instructor out of the front of the classroom, and I use that in quotations, by just really reducing the power dynamic and just asking and identifying what the participant may need. And they might not even know what they need. The space is open for them to explore that.
Dina Hassel is a certified trauma-sensitive yoga instructor in Wauwatosa, exploring a mind-body connection for trauma survivors and the potential for healing. Call in with a question. You can share what's on your mind at any point. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Mm-hmm.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore a yoga practice for survivors of trauma and the benefits of connecting movement and breath. Dina Haslett is a certified trauma-sensitive yoga instructor in Wauwatosa, and there's space to talk. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective at any point. The number to join in is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dina, 25 years ago, you started your wellness career path as a group exercise instructor at a local YMCA. And you became a registered nurse a decade ago. How did you incorporate yoga into your life and into your practice?
When I first started as a fitness instructor, one of the things I wanted to do, to put it very simply, is to get a deeper stretch at the end of a step aerobics class or a muscle conditioning class. And that was really the start of my yoga journey. And I would practice here and there. And it was when I became a registered nurse that I really took my yoga practice seriously. I worked in the ER. We worked long shifts. The work was emotionally draining, but it was what I wanted to do, but it still was it was difficult. And so I needed something to return to myself and become centered again after working long shifts in the ER. And that is where my yoga practice really, where I really implemented my yoga practice.
I wonder, and I know this is a really specific question, did you practice Sure. yoga before or after a shift in the ER?
So when I first started, I actually would practice after. Mm-hmm. And so I worked weekends because, I'm a mom and my son was very young at the time. He was maybe 13 months old. I would practice. Monday was my time to, okay, my husband has our son and I am on my mat. I am practicing. I am going to a studio to do some hot yoga. And that was my routine. And it just really, I deepened with my practice from there. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I carry on.
No, I was just going to say, I just discovered that yoga was just so useful for many other things, other than just becoming centered after work. So rather than just practicing, one or two times a week, I began to practice multiple days a week. Hmm.
Did that have a change in you? What change in yourself did you feel? Did you experience?
The change that I experienced was being more calm. It had a positive impact on my mental health. I also noticed that things that bothered me throughout my day, those things that were bothering me did not seem as important. And I began to discover that my trauma that I experienced started coming up. And I noticed that the yoga was useful for handling my own triggers. Hmm.
There was a study last year, primarily among Black women veterans, found their PTSD symptoms improved more quickly than others who received only cognitive psychotherapy. How do you interpret research as to the effectiveness of trauma-sensitive yoga?
Well, the trauma lives in the body, your body and your nervous system. One of the books that I read on trauma was The Body Keeps the Score. And your physical body can interpret that there is a danger happening even when there is not a danger that is occurring. And that is a very physical response. And the trauma-sensitive yoga definitely assists with the physical response that you are having in real time through the breath work, through observation, and through mindfulness and meditation. Go ahead.
I'm going to just jump in here to bring in Christy, calling in from Maryland. Christy, hi, go ahead.
Good morning. I had a question. I wanted to know, is there a difference between restorative yoga and trauma-sensitive yoga? And if so, what that is? And also, you may have just answered this question, but the impact on the nervous system when you take trauma-sensitive yoga.
Christy, thank you so much for the call. Dina, go ahead.
Sure. So there is a slight difference between restorative and trauma-sensitive yoga. Trauma-sensitive yoga is a very active practice. There's actually movement that is involved. And you can definitely incorporate aspects of restorative yoga into the trauma-sensitive practice. Restorative is more of a passive practice where you use props such as bolsters and blocks and blankets to assist you into a certain posture. And you can definitely incorporate aspects of this into the trauma-sensitive practice if the participant is open to that. But trauma-sensitive is more of a movement practice that we invite participants to take on different forms.
And Christy also is wondering the impact on the nervous system. Can you feel that or explore that?
So the impact on the nervous system. So trauma can impact one's sense of self, one sense of their place in the world. And that the nervous system is constantly surveying for danger. So when your fight or flight is engaged, this is in response to some external stimulus that is going on in your environment. And the trauma-sensitive yoga can definitely assist you with bringing yourself back to your center, even though you're having this response that is occurring with your nervous system.
Dina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed this time.
Dina Haslett is a certified trauma-sensitive yoga instructor in Wauwatosa. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.